Welcome to Making Learning Fun. In today's episode, we shall be discussing about the anatomy of the abdomen, and we will consider the anterior abdominal wall. The objectives of this episode: the attachment of the muscles of anterior lateral abdominal wall, the formation and content of rectus sheets, the inguinal canal, and how its relations are of importance in the reduction and repair of the inguinal hernia. Definition of terms. Anterior lateral, it simply refers to both the front as well as the side walls of the abdomen. Abdomen is the part of the body of a vertebrae containing the digestive and reproductive organs. It is what we popularly call the belly. So when we talk about the anterior lateral abdominal wall, we are referring to the front as well as the side walls of our bellies. Rectus sheet is also called the rectus fascia. By the word sheet, we are referring to a structure in living tissue which closely envelopes another. It is like a covering for the rectus abdominis, the muscle referred to as abs in our bellies. This sheet or fascia is formed by the aponeurosis of the transverse abdominal and the internal and external oblique muscles. It contains the rectus abdominis and the pyramidalis muscles. So the rectus sheet is just an envelope that envelopes the rectus abdominis, and then a little portion is also enveloped by the, is also covering the pyramidalis muscles, though the pyramidalis muscle is very just a little portion in there. Then the next thing we'll define is the inguinal hernia. But before we define the inguinal hernia, let's first of all know what inguinal canal is. The inguinal region of the body is also called the groin. It is located on the lower portion of the anterior abdominal wall. So when you go the lower portion of your stomach, the region that is like a V leading to the private part is what we call the inguinal region. So if I want to use the anatomy term, I will say the inguinal region of the body is located on the lower portion of the anterior abdominal wall with the thigh inferiorly, the pubic tubercle medially, and the anterior superior iliac spine superior laterally. So the inguinal canal is a tubular structure that runs inferior medially. If you look at it, it goes down like below and then going to the middle of that side, at least to your private part, and contains the spermatic cord in the case of males and the round ligament in females. So the inguinal hernia is a protrusion of abdominal cavity content, for example, intestine. So when the intestine is protruding into that inguinal canal is what we now call the inguinal hernia. So this is just to define the terms in those topics. So let's start mainly. We'll be starting with the surface landmarks of the abdomen. When we talk about the surface landmarks of any part of the body, we're referring to the external features around that part for the purpose of description. So when we say the surface landmark, we're just trying to describe all the boundaries, everything about the abdomen, both the extension, what is around it. That's what we're considering. So in the anterior median plane, the abdominal wall extends from the xiphoid process. I think for you to be understanding this, probably you need to be looking at your own stomach as I'm describing it, so that you will also understand. So when you look at the anterior median plane, that is the middle in front of your stomach, the middle of it, at the top you see the xiphoid process. That part under your chest that is like an inverted V is called the xiphoid process, and that lies at the level of the 9th thoracic vertebra. So we'll trace that part down, going to the pubic symphysis, of which I explained. When you go down that region before you get to the private part is the pubic symphysis. So and that lies at the level of the cusic. So posteriorly, that is behind and laterally at the side, the vertical extent of the abdominal wall is much less, as it is replaced by the thoracic cage above. You can see at the top, we say it is the thoracic cage, that is your chest. Above and behind, you have the thoracic cage. It is above and it is even behind, you find the thoracic cage. And then by the gluteal region, that is posteriorly and behind, you have the gluteal region, that is your buttocks, on the posterior aspect of the lower part of the abdomen. So the superior lateral margins of the anterior abdominal wall, the superior, when you hear the word superior, up, lateral margins of the anterior abdominal wall are formed by the right and left costal margin. So when you look at the upper part now, the upper part and the sides, your right and left chests, that's the costal margin, you see it now. So trace the V down, like the level of your chest now, that's what we call the costal margin. So each margin is formed by the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th costal cartilages. Costal cartilages. These costal cartilages are what attaches the rib. So the margins are formed by the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th costal cartilages. The costal margin reaches its lowest level in the mid-axillary line. If you trace a straight line from your armpit downward, is what we call the mid-axillary line. So here the margin is formed by the 10th costal cartilage, the transverse plane, the horizontal plane, that's what called transverse plane. When you draw a horizontal plane passing through the lowest part of that costal margin is called the subcostal plane. So below the chest at that xiphoid process, below it now, that is below the costal margin, a transverse plane or a horizontal line that is drawn at that region is called the subcostal plane. It passes through the third lumbar vertebra. The infrasternal or subcostal angle, infra is telling you below, sterna, that is the sternum. So below the sternum, which is also the subcostal angle, is formed between the right and the left costal margin. So the xiphoid process lies in a depression at the apex of the infrasternal angle at the level of the 9th thoracic vertebra. Just trying to describe the xiphoid process. The iliac crest, now when you look below the iliac crest, that same place when we talk about, okay, when you touch your wrists, when you touch your waist, the bone that you feel there going down is the iliac crest. It forms the lower limit of the abdominal wall at the side, and it is this region that we are calling that inguinal region. So the iliac crest here, the bone that you're feeling when you touch your waist, it's forming the lower limit of the abdominal wall at the side. So the highest point of the iliac crest lies at the level of the 4th lumbar vertebra. We're just trying to relate that bone to the vertebral bone. So it is related to the 4th lumbar vertebra, slightly below the normal level of the umbilicus, which is at L3. That is the 3rd lumbar vertebra. The umbilicus is found at the 3rd lumbar vertebra, related to 3rd lumbar vertebra. So the anterior superior iliac spine lies at the level of the sacral promontory, the inwardly projecting anterior part of the body of the 1st sacral vertebra. To aid understanding, I'll encourage that you view some of these things from the pictures. It will help you to understand it properly. The tubercle of the iliac crest is situated on the outer lip of the iliac crest, about 5 cm behind the anterior superior iliac spine. The intertubercular plane passes through the tubercles. It passes through the fifth lumbar vertebra. The inguinal ligament extends from the anterior superior iliac spine to the pubic tubercle. It is convex downward. It is placed at the junction of the anterior abdominal wall with the front of the thigh. The spermatic cord is a soft rounded cord present in the male. It can be felt through the skin as it passes downward near the medial end of the inguinal ligament to enter the scrotum. It can be picked up between the finger and the thumb. When palpated in this way, a firm cord-like structure can be felt within the posterior part of the spermatic cord. This is the ductus deferens, or it is also called the vas deferens. It is this duct that transports sperm from the epididymis to the ejaculatory duct in anticipation of ejaculation. It is a partially coiled tube which exits the abdominal cavity through the inguinal canal. The anterior abdominal wall is divided into right and left half by a vertical groove. It marks the position of the underlying linea alba. So, you know, I was describing from the xiphoid process down to the pubic symphysis. So if we draw a straight line now from that region, it's called the linea alba. So that linea alba divides the abdomen into two parts, the right and the left half. A little below the middle of the median furrow, there is an irregular depressed or elevated area called the umbilicus, which in Latin is the navel. It lies at the level of the junction between the third and fourth lumbar vertebrae. So the umbilicus is found between the third and fourth lumbar vertebrae. A few centimeters lateral to the median furrow, the abdominal wall shows a curved vertical groove. Its upper end reaches the costal margin at the tip of the ninth costal cartilage. Inferiorly, it reaches the pubic tubercle. This line is called the linea semilunaris. It corresponds to the lateral margin of a muscle called the rectus abdominis. So if you look at your stomach, let me explain that linea semilunaris. That six pack, where the six pack stop laterally, that is at the side, not medially now close to the navel, but laterally, as if you're going at the side of your stomach. So if you look at it, where the six pack stops laterally, the line, if you want to draw a line on from now the costal margin downward to the pubic tubercle, that line that you would draw is called linea semilunaris. So it corresponds to the lateral margin of the rectus abdominis. The transpyloric plane, is another line, is an imaginary transverse plane, that is a horizontal line, often referred in anatomical descriptions. Anteriorly, it passes through the tips of the ninth costal margins and posteriorly through the lower part of the body of the first lumbar vertebrae. This plane lies midway between the suprasternal notch and the pubic symphysis. It is roughly a hand's breadth below the xiphosternal joint. It passes through the pylorus of stomach, the hilum of the kidney, that is hilum of each of the kidneys, so in plural I would call it hila of the kidneys, fundus of gallbladder, neck of pancreas, origin of celiac axis, and superior mesenteric arteries. The angle between the last rib, that is the 12th rib, and the outer body border of erector spina, one of the posterior muscles, is known as the renal angle. So at the back, when you consider the back muscle, there is an angle between the last rib and the outer body border of the erector spina. That angle is known as the renal angle. it overlies the lower part of the kidney. The 12th rib may only be just palpable lateral to erector spina or may extend for some distance beyond it. Posterior superior iliac spine lies about 4 cm lateral to the median plane. So that is it about the surface landmark of the abdomen. Now let's look at the skin and the superficial fascia of the abdomen. The skin, when you dissect and remove the skin, what you find immediately after the skin is the superficial fascia. So the skin of the anterior abdominal wall is capable of undergoing enormous stretching, as is seen in pregnancy, with accumulation of fats called obesity or fluid called ascites, and with growth of large intra-abdominal tumors. Undue stretching may result in the formation of whitish or brownish or goldish or somehow yellowish, depending on the color of your skin, streak in the skin of the lower part of the anterior abdominal wall. These are known as linear albicantes. Linear albicantes. You know, if you look at some people's stomach, you'll be seeing some stretches, some like streaks, like line. It's not really harmful though, but those lines are there. Those lines are due to some because the skin around that region has been stretched. Undue stretching may result to that. So that is what we call the linear albicantes. Okay, the umbilicus. Let's look at the umbilicus. The umbilicus is the normal scar in the anterior abdominal wall formed by the remnants of the roots of the umbilical cord. The position of the umbilicus is variable. In healthy adult, it lies in the anterior median line at the level of the discs between the third and fourth lumbar vertebrae. It is lower in infants and in persons with a pendulous abdomen. When you hear pendulous abdomen, it's a condition where the abnormally relaxed anterior wall of the abdomen hangs over the pubis. You see some people's stomach, it's like a pendulum bob, just like it protrude out and then is like falling down. The skin of the stomach is seen like falling down, just folded downward. So that's what is referred to as pendulous abdomen. Apart from its embryological importance, there are several facts of interest about the umbilicus. So let's look at the anatomical importance of the umbilicus. One, with reference to the lymphatic and venous drainage, the level of the umbilicus is a watershed. Lymph and venous blood flow upwards above the plane of the umbilicus and downwards below the spleen. These do not normally cross umbilical plane. The skin around the umbilicus is supplied by segment T10 of the spinal cord. So the skin around the umbilicus is supplied by the nerve thoracic 10 of the spinal cord. The umbilicus is one of the important sites at which tributaries of the portal vein anastomose with the systemic vein, and that forms the portocava anastomosis. So it's around that region you find the portocava anastomosis, that is the portal vein joining the systemic vein. Let's look at the embryological importance of the umbilicus. The umbilicus is the meeting point of the four folds of embryonic plates. When we talk about the four folds, we're referring to two lateral, head and tail. This is also the meeting point of the three system, namely the digestive system, which is the vertilo-intestinal duct, the excretory, that is the uracus, and the vascular, the umbilical vessel. So it's the meeting point of this three system, is at the umbilicus. So let's consider the superficial fascia of the umbilicus. Below the level of the umbilicus, below it, the superficial fascia of the anterior abdominal wall is divided into the superficial fatty layer, which is called the fascia of Campa, and the deep membranous layer, which is known as the fascia of Scapa. So what we are considering is the superficial fascia of the abdomen. Now we'll finish with the skin. So we say after you remove the skin, the next structure you see is the superficial fascia. So the superficial fascia is divided into the superficial fatty layer and the deep membranous layer. The superficial fatty layer is also called fascia of Campa. The deep membranous layer is also called fascia of Scapa. In the median plane, that is in the middle, the membranous layer is thickened to form the suspensory ligament and fundiform ligament of the penis or clitoris. The superficial fascia contains an extremely variable quantity of fat, which tends to accumulate in the lower part of the abdomen after puberty. It also contains the cutaneous nerves from T7 to L1. It contains the cutaneous vessels and the superficial lymphatics. Take note of this point. When the portal vein or the superior vena cava or the inferior vena cava is obstructed, the superficial abdominal veins are dilated and provide a collateral circulation. The dilated veins that radiate from the umbilicus are given the name caput medullae. Caput medullae. Above the level of the umbilicus, the lymphatics run upwards to drain into the axillary lymph nodes. Below the level of the umbilicus, they run downwards to drain into the superficial inguinal lymph node.